Welcome to the ultimate crowdsourced personal finance show. This is your Friday Roundup.
You're listening to Choose FI Radio. The blueprint for financial independence lives here. If you're looking to unlock the secrets to financial independence and early retirement, you're in the right place. Stay tuned and join a community of like-minded people who are getting off the hamster wheel and taking control of their lives in the pursuit of financial independence. Choose FI, your home for financial independence online.
Okay, we're back. Congratulations. So you've made it to the weekend. This is your Friday Roundup. And as usual, I have Brad here with me in the studio. How you doing, Brad?
I'm doing great, Jonathan. Yeah, what's going on by you?
I'm starting to make summer plans, trying to figure out exactly what that's going to look like. We're trying to figure out what we can do. We're finding out more and more that with our son, we can't do anything, at least outside. So while you may be down at the pool every day, we are sitting inside, looking outside, thinking, oh, that looks nice.
Yeah, no, I hear you. It's so hot here. Really ridiculous. And we kind of talk about that, like, what was our life like before we went to this pool? So I definitely can appreciate that.
Well, you can just take pictures of my family, all three of us staring out the window, looking longingly at the people walking down the street saying, maybe 2018.
Nice. Yeah, that sounds good. And we actually have kind of a cool thing coming up this weekend. We have a little Richmond Phi get together, which should be fun. We hopefully can maybe even expand these beyond Richmond. We'll have one in DC or in North Carolina somewhere. And yeah, who knows? It's just kind of should be a real fun time to get together with some like-minded people.
Super excited about that. Got to go to Costco and get my Blue Moon variety pack.
Ah, nice. Very impressive.
I come to impress. So this past week, we had this episode with Joel from Fi180.com, and we did the milestones of Fi. And I was super excited because I felt like these were metrics or milestones that you could actually grab hold of. And I didn't feel that that was something that I had read, at least in that tangible format. We had a couple people email us and said that there were a few other people in our space, other influencers who had done something similar. Notably, JD Roth had done one called The Six Stages of Financial Independence. Am I right about that, Brad?
Yeah, Brittany and Laura both sent us emails saying precisely that about JD's article. Yep, it was called The Six Stages of Financial Freedom is the title.
Okay, so I thought it'd be kind of cool to go take a look at those and mention them on the podcast, just since JD has been such an influence on both of our lives. And although I was not aware of this particular article, let's go ahead and give those a plug real quick. Stage zero was dependence. Stage one was sovereignty. Stage two was stability. Stage three was agency. Stage four was security. Stage five was independence. And stage six was abundance. So we'll link to that in the article so y'all can check those out if you're interested. One of the things I liked about the milestones that Joel wrote is I very much felt like depending on your number, it would be very easy to check the box and say, I am here. You know, that there was something very tangible about those milestones. And for me, it just made it a very enjoyable read.
Yeah, agreed. And people like to see progress, right? I talk about this all the time on the podcast. It's progress in every aspect of life is what I'm trying to do and trying to just get better. And I think the path to Fi can be a lonely one. And I think that might be partially why people like our podcast so much and like the Facebook group, because it's a sense of community. But for many of us, especially before this came around, like this is a long, lonely path with very few milestones. For many people, it's just not Fi and Fi. It's zero or one. And I think that is just not good enough. I mean, I think we do need these milestones. And, you know, Jonathan, I think you and I plan to kind of update these and maybe drill down and get them more specific. And hopefully the community can help us with this. I know we've had a lot of input on the Facebook group this week, and that's what we're going to do today, is kind of talk about some more real concrete milestones, maybe earlier on in the path.
Yeah. In fact, as much as we added all these milestones in and we tried to do some earlier ones, I kind of feel like we just left this huge gap in between FU money and being at half Fi. There's a lot of time in between those two. I would love to, if not give you milestones, give you checkpoints. You know, Joel gave me credit for gamifying things, and I'm certainly not the first person to gamify personal finance, but I am probably the first person to try to do it on a twice a week basis, consistently giving you little things that you can get excited about. As I do, when I read a new article and the light bulb goes off, I want to tell everybody everybody. And frankly, my wife can only take so much of my excitement before she says, please find some more friends to go talk to this stuff about. So that's what you guys are. I'm bringing you in on this. I'm sharing how excited I get about these concepts. And fortunately, if no one else wanted to listen, I have Brad, so I can at least talk to him about it twice a week.
You're welcome, buddy.
Thank you so much. My sanity is in check. So I think the place to really start is, and again, these are the milestones. There's a mentality aspect to this that I think other people have touched on, but I think for us, we want to focus on more tangibles. So the first one, the most obvious place to start that we mentioned, but then for whatever reason didn't label as a milestone, I would say the first milestone is when your financial freedom clock starts. So we latched onto the concept that it is net worth, a positive net worth, and all of your consumer debt paid off except for your home. And we had an asterisk by the home because there's some variability there. I would say that for the FI community, as I thought about it more and more, I realized that we might also need an asterisk by the student loans as well. Although I think for 90% of our audience, it involves having your student loans paid off. There is enough of a segment in our audience that are considering student loan repayment options and have done the math to prove that they will pay less. And in our community, it's all about the math. We're not dogmatic about any particular topic. We just want to explore your options and then come up with the most optimized path. So if that is the math that you're running and you've decided that by using a loan repayment service or by gaming it out another way, it will actually work to your advantage to not pay them off, but to invest, but you've already jumped on board with everything else, I think that you can make the case that your student loans can have that asterisk as well, but certainly you're not going to have any other consumer debt and you would have a positive net worth. Brad, what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, that sounds reasonable. I think, like you said, it always comes down to the math. So someone got on you a while back for having a car loan, but again, they didn't ask you what your interest rate was, right? So if it was 0 or 1%, then that makes sense, right? Like it's not, if you had a $300,000 net worth and a $10,000 car loan with a 1% interest on it, well, you're obviously past milestone one, right? I mean, that's a decision you've made that it makes sense financially and mathematically for you to have that car loan. So I'm fine with decisions like that. So I don't want to be dogmatic with the no debt. I mean, clearly, if you have credit card debt, you got to get rid of that. I mean, that's 20% interest or whatever it is. If you have any kind of really, I mean, payday loans, you know, hopefully nobody in our audience has these things, but absurdly high interest rate debt, that's got to go. But I mean, if you're talking student loans and you've made a determination that you're going to pay it off over X time, or like you said, some repayment option, that's a separate case. A mortgage, I mean, you can't expect somebody to necessarily pay off their mortgage to just get on the milestones, right? So, because I would be at milestone zero then. But
yeah, you're just horrible at life, man. Come right. on, you're going to have this podcast and you're at milestone zero?
Yeah. So a lot of this comes down to where you are in your own head and where you determine you are on this continuum here. So, and I think that's actually one thing I want to talk about at the tail end is my response to where I am on this FI path. And I know in speaking with my wife, Laura, we had a little tiff about this. So
nice. I'm just skipping everything in the middle and going to that part to listen to that right now.
Yes, it should be good. It wasn't that big of a deal, but you know, I think it proves that you can't just give a flippant answer to this. You need to kind of think it through. And going back to your actual question is the financial freedom clock. So Jonathan, can you just, for anyone who didn't hear the Monday episode, can you give a little background on that?
Yeah, absolutely. So the financial freedom clock is a term that was coined by Jeremy over at Go Curry Cracker. And essentially, and we reference it back in, I believe, episode 18. So you can go back and listen to that episode if you want. But at some point in time, your countdown to FI begins. And when you're still cleaning up all your crap from past mistake and past choices, it's really hard to get that thing going. So in that episode, we basically established that your financial freedom clock is when you've gotten rid of all of your consumer debt, you've gotten rid of your student loans, and now you have a very linear focus on increasing your net worth to the point where you can say, I am at FI. And you have to take care of all that baggage before you can really get there. But from the time that you've got a positive net worth, you've cleaned up all the consumer debt, you don't have the couch payment anymore, that's when that financial freedom clock starts ticking down, my friends, and you're getting closer and closer to your goal. And when you're in our community, that goal is financial independence.
Nice, I like that. So, okay, so $0 or, you know, $1 net worth or more, and any of the garbage debt is gone, right? That's how we want to say this succinctly.
Yes. And if you want to make a case for your singular case and your justification on your student loans or your mortgage, you know, first of all, we just want to let you know you're fine. That's fine. If you have a case to make, just make your case, do the math, make sure you're being intentional. But the general concept remains with what we just said. All right. So that is milestone one. And I think milestone number two, this is where we hopped in and we said it's the personal capital phone call, which I love. I think that that is a very specific metric that you can use. But when you peel the curtain back and you take a look at what that actually means, that's a six-figure net worth. That is, you have your $100,000 in your investment vehicles, and personal capital will then give you a phone call offering a free consultation once you've hit that metric if you're using their service. And that is a service that both Brad and I use. We've used it for a long, long time, 5, 6, 7 years now. And most of the FI community bloggers especially use that tool as just a great way to track all of your different accounts in one place. And I can say I have my VTSAX that I can track there. I can track my retirement accounts in there. I can track my wife's retirement accounts in there. I'm able to put it all together, which is really cool to be able to put all those assets in one place. And then you can see them go up or down together, right?
Yeah, indeed. It's a useful tool. And, you know, this is obviously a cutesy thing that Joel came up with, or, you know, we talked about on the Monday episode. Clearly, the larger point is the $100,000 net worth. I mean, that's the milestone. It is cute that you will start getting calls from personal capital, and I like that as kind of a fun milestone. But yeah, clearly the bedrock of this is the $100,000 net worth.
And it was perfectly timed. Drew, when he heard the episode, he commented on our Facebook group and he said, after listening to today's podcast, I'm happy to report that we completed our first FI milestone. And he actually took a screenshot of his transcript on his phone. And the transcript said, hey, this is Andrew calling from Personal Capital. Schedule your free financial review. A great way to get a second opinion on your current investment strategy and ensure you're on the right track to meet your goal. We can be reached by calling 855-FI. We look forward to speaking with you and have a great day. This is awesome. This is actually what your personal capital phone call is going to look like. I hope I didn't spoil it for you too much. But Drew, congratulations for completing the first FI milestone. I think we're going to make the case today that it might actually be the second or the third. So you're even farther along on this journey than you thought. The little bit of controversy we had just between us while we were doing the episode was that depending on your annual spend, there's the case to make that you might actually hit this next milestone before you hit the personal capital milestone. And that one is FU money. And Joel defined FU money as 1 to 2 years worth of expenses. And we talked about the psychological power that having 1 to 2 years of expenses saved up would give you in your own personal life. And it essentially gives you more power at work. It gives you the ability to make decisions that are your best interest. And worst case scenario, if you were to be let go or you were to step away, you don't need to worry about how to keep the lights on because you have 1 to 2 years worth of your day-to-day expenses ready to go. And then you can use your leisure and take your time to find the right fit for yourself and your family. And that's very powerful. It gives you the upper hand in negotiations. It gives you the upper hand in just your own mental health and well-being. It's a much more powerful look at the emergency fund. What are your thoughts on that, Brad?
Yeah, I love the concept of FU money. I think it is very nebulous, though. And I think that's why there's some, you know, quote unquote controversy or, you know, just disagreement over or where this fits in the milestones, because it comes down to you personally, right? Like, you might feel that you have FU money if you have 4 months worth of expenses saved up. And that's fine. You know, like we always mention here, like, this is all personal. It's how you want to look at FI, look at life, look at your journey. So if you think FU money starts at 4 months of expenses, great. And that's fine by me. You know, I think I am a little more conservative when it comes to money. So for me, it would be 2 to 3 years of my annual spending saved up. So I think I wouldn't really consider that I had FU money before then. But like I mentioned in the Monday episode, FU money really does follow you throughout this entire process. So it becomes stronger and stronger, and you have more power as your net worth increases and as you get closer to actual FI. So that's an important thing to remember is FU money, and that concept is always in the background here.
And as a result of that, you could make the case that those two are really interchangeable and that FU money could in fact be, so if the financial freedom clock was milestone one, then FU money could be milestone two and personal capital could be three, or you could switch those depending on your particular life status. But at some point, it's good to acknowledge yourself, yeah, I have my FU money. And whatever that is for you, you can check that box once you're ready to get there.
Yeah, agreed. And I would, since we are revisiting these, I think there really should be a milestone before this $100,000/FU money.
Sounds like there's a man with a plan. What do you got?
Yeah, well, I don't know if I have a plan, but we're going to talk it through. I mean, because for some people, realistically, it could take years to get to $100,000 of net worth. So I would hate for that person to not be able to check some of these milestones off or not feel like they're making progress if they're at $10,000 net worth and then $13,000, and because that is progress, right? And that's important. So I don't know. I mean, Jonathan, do you have any thoughts of, and not to sandbag you on this, but like anything between zero and 100,000 that makes sense other than just arbitrarily saying 50,000 or something like that?
Well, 50,000 doesn't sound that arbitrary to me. I thought it was clever, but nah. If you're going to take that one away from me, yes, I can come up with a backup for my backup. Yeah, it's actually a great question. And I do have some feedback for it. We put it out to our Facebook group to just see what else could we throw in here. And I think the distinction that I'm going to make, though, is that there are some checkpoints. So Joel gave me credit for like gamifying things. And I think that a checkpoint is like this perfect intermediate to get excited about along the way. I don't know if you would give it quite the same credo as you would a milestone, but I think it's one of these things that once you've checked it off, you can give yourself a little pat on the back, even if no one else cares, and feel good about yourself. So things like that first time that you aren't paycheck to paycheck, you know, that first time that you put something on the 72-hour list, where you go from being that impulse buyer, as soon as you want it, you buy it, to now, let me think about this decision and be a little bit more intentional with it. That first time that you max out a traditional IRA, that first time that you max out your 401k, that first time that you pay $0 in taxes, right? These are little things that not everybody is going to experience, but a lot of us can when we're actually applying our minds to it.
Yeah, I love that. This is actually the first time I'm hearing of it. So have these checkpoints in parallel with the larger milestones. So yeah, that's a cool way of doing it. Because yeah, again, it gamifies it and it gives people a sense of progress. So again, if any input from the audience on just more of these, right? We can brainstorm as many checkpoints as we want, because like Jonathan said, some people are going to hit them, some people aren't. They're just these things in the background to know, oh wow, I feel good about myself, I checked this thing off. So that's pretty cool.
And I would love to take total credit for it, but Louise threw out like 6 or 7 of these and a couple of them I just hijacked. But this was a really cool one that you'll get excited about. For those of us that love travel rewards, when you get 1 million, 1 million, 1 million rewards points or miles, how cool is that? That is a pretty cool metric that you would only experience in our community and have an audience that you could get excited about it with. And then also, this is another one. This is a huge one and one of my favorites. And I did have mine recently. Reaching that 50% savings rate. That is huge, right?
Yeah, that is huge. That's really, really awesome. Yeah. So, I mean, you know, it's funny as you're saying this, I'm like, oh, well, we could have another checkpoint of I took my first travel rewards trip for free or nearly free. Like that's a checkpoint before the 1 million miles. I mean, we can keep spinning this out and just making it more and more fun. I mean, obviously we don't want to have hundreds of these things, right?
I'm going to make an infographic. It's going to be like 6 feet long with 200 different checkpoints that you can hit along the way. And then I'll have it turned into a poster that you can get and put in your man cave or in your, what's the opposite of a man cave? Is that a woman cave? You got to put it on the wall and you just check it as you go. But there's got to be like 100 of these little things that you can hit along the way. And Louise, those are awesome ideas. Especially that 50% savings rate, very inspiring and doable for most people once they've tackled some of these other challenges first. So those were checkpoints. I don't think any one of those, Brad, could be said as a milestone. Do you feel like any of those rise to the level of a milestone?
No, I wouldn't say so at this point.
Yeah. Yeah. But anyways, if you have one to add that we missed, and we certainly think that this conversation got started and did not get finished here, please join our Facebook group, chooseify.com/Facebook. Give us your feedback, your input, your ideas, things that you got excited about when you realized that for the first time you hit this marker. I know that we had someone in our community was saying that they basically make a note on their calendar every single time they hit a new 50 grand marker. So every single time their net worth goes up by 50K, that gets a note on their calendar. And for them, that's just an additional step that they're getting a little bit closer to their goal. So whatever it is for you, we're interested and we would like to adopt some of those. And basically when you hit one of these little checkpoints, just take a second and feel good about it and recognize that although it's historically has seemed like kind of a wasteland, you're either FI or you're not FI. No, you're getting a little bit closer to freedom every single day that you make the choice to be intentional. And that's the power of being in a community like this is that your mindset is so focused. And inevitably, if you can stay focused on your goal for extended periods of time, 1 year, 2 year, 3 year, 10 years, everything speeds up. 1 + 1 = 2. It's 25 times your annual expenses, you know, in the construct of our FI community.
Yeah. And I think that's what Joel was kind of talking about with the crossover point. Right, Jonathan, that was an interesting one for later in the milestones. I think we had that somewhere around 6, right?
Yes, we'll get there soon. So let's see. So we've got the financial freedom clock was the one that I felt like we really did a disservice by not labeling as a milestone. And so I would say that that's one. And then we say either FU money or personal capital is 2. And the other one would be 3. And then now we're looking for our fourth one, which was half FI, which basically means that you have half the money you need to reach financial independence. And as an extension or another cute way of looking at it, either you or your spouse or partner, if you're married, one of you is now officially at FI. And the other cool thing to recognize when you get there is that just because you have half the money does not mean you're halfway there. You're actually closer to 2/3 of the way there because at this point, your money is actually working for you. And that goes back to us talking about the power of time, the power of getting this started early on in your journey, making those right decisions as soon as possible, and the power of passing this on to the next generation as well, capturing the imagination while you're young. Because if you make a few right choices early on, it prevents you from having to make quite as many right choices later on.
Yeah. And you always see those calculators of the person who started at age 20 saving $3,000 a year versus the person who started saving at 35 and they have to save X number of thousands of dollars more per month or whatever it is just to catch up. So yeah, I mean, the power of time and compounding is crucial. And that's a much larger point that many of us in the FI community understand, but just getting started. That's what we talk about a lot here is just taking action and getting this money working for you.
So after milestone number 4, you come to milestone number 5, and this is Lean FI. And Lean FI is extremely appealing to me because at this point, you essentially have enough money to cover all of your core expenses, all of your survival expenses. You can keep the lights on, you can keep food in your stomach. Your baseline is completely secure for life. Now, it doesn't cover your discretionary spending, but power you have by knowing that no matter what happens, you can survive. Once you latch onto that, that is power right there.
Yeah, and Joel's quote was, "This is an emergency fund that will last forever." And that to me, that resonated. I absolutely love that quote. And clearly, you're not going to want to live this way every single day for the rest of your life. It's not the ideal scenario to not have $1 of discretionary income. But if you flip that on its head, you say, wow, I can live forever if I had to just on my essential items. And I mean, that is a crucial milestone. And for Joel, he said it was 70% of his FI number, which means 70% of his annual spending is the bedrock foundational items and 30% is discretionary currently. And for each of us, it's different. So again, this is dependent on you and your life and what works for you. So that 70% is not a hard and fast number, but I suspect many people will be somewhere in that 60 to 80%, let's say.
And Joel's number that he was talking about, his life cost $25,000 a year for his general lifestyle. And that included core expenses and discretionary spending. I think that was a goal. I think he was saying he was actually closer to 30, trying to get it down to 25. And there's a lot to touch on there, why that challenge can be fun and is useful to consider. One of the things that struck me is that for him, $25,000 goes a lot farther because he doesn't have a mortgage. And so when I was looking, I was doing a similar exercise for myself and mine is up closer to $35,000 or $40,000 a year. And I have a mortgage baked into that. But what struck me when I was thinking about it is in our community, just because you don't have a paid for house does not mean that you can't have that similar lifestyle. So you're thinking, well, Joel can live for $25,000 a year because he already paid for his house, which means he had a high income. That's fine. You can say that. But the more creative approach would be, how can I live for free? In our community, we already have examples of people that have figured this out. And specifically, I'm thinking about house hacking. If you really wanted to make this choice, if you were really open to just winning and you just wanted to know what it was you didn't know, you could go listen to episode, I believe it's 16 with Coach Carson about house hacking. And you could use that same tool to essentially purchase a duplex, triplex, or quad, live in one side, rent out the other 3, and they essentially are paying off your mortgage. Plus, you may even be making a profit, and you would essentially be able to have, through that one creative choice, just reduce your expenses by the amount necessary to reflect the lifestyle that Joel is living. So I'm not telling you that you have to do that, but I think it's very limiting to say I can't do that because I don't have a paid for house.
Yeah, I definitely like the creativity there, and that will work for some people, won't work for others, but again, just thinking a little bit differently. So you might think that might not work, but why not actually run the numbers, do some research? You know, I'm not advocating that in particular, but I think it's a cool idea, if nothing else. And I think this also comes back to the math. So paying off your house sounds good in theory, but many of us don't do it because we believe, as opposed to that money sitting there idly, essentially in equity tied up in this house, it can be in the market earning hopefully more, right? I think that's the mathematical play here, is why people go back and forth over whether it makes sense to pay off your mortgage. So that's a whole separate argument, obviously. But naturally, in that case, if you didn't pay off your mortgage, you would have a higher annual spending, but in theory, your assets in the market would be significantly higher as well. So it depends on like how you calculate your FI number, I guess.
That's a great point, but I do want to slow down here, Brad, because I think that even though I recognize that you're talking to the FI community, and the FI community is a very odd cohort. And we do look at that as, well, I could either invest the money and pay off my house, or I can invest the money in the stock market. I think when you take that message and you apply it to the public at large, they may get the first part, which is, well, I'm not going to pay down my house because I don't think that's as good of an investment and I can make more. The public at large does not make that second choice to max out their investment vehicles. They don't recapture that savings and use it and throw it into any sort of investment vehicle. In many cases, it just goes to lifestyle creep. And that's what's different about our community. That's why we can have an intellectual discussion about the pros and the cons of paying off our house. Because once you've made the choice that you're going to save 50% of your income, that money is going to get used to buy yourself an asset either way. You're just making the choice of which asset you want to plug that money into.
Yeah, no, that's a good point without question. And clearly, I'm not talking about not putting the money into savings and just blowing it on other useless garbage in your life. And so a lot of this, I guess, is psychological also. I think that's another aspect that we didn't really touch on here, but have in the past, is while the math might tell you one thing, psychology also impacts it as well, right? Like there is this allure to me of paying off my mortgage, even though I know mathematically it's not the smartest thing, or I believe, let's say, that it's based on the evidence that I've seen that it's not the smartest thing. But man, would it feel good to not have that mortgage. So that is powerful to me. And going back to the very beginning of this, is my setup here is you need to either invest this money fully or put it into your mortgage fully. Like that's what we're talking about here. We're not talking about, oh, I'm not going to invest and I'm going to fritter some of it away. So hopefully everybody listening to this understands where I was going with them.
And I think this is a fine line in the FI community. We have the ultra optimizers, and then we have those of us that maybe are coming in from more of a Dave Ramsey perspective. And I'll count myself in that group, extremely debt averse, or those of us that just love cash flow. And those two are waging a war against each other. There's something so appealing to me about being able to say that I can live my life just the way I have it right now for $20,000 a year, or $25,000 a year, or $30,000 a year, as opposed to $40,000 or $50,000 a year if I have my mortgage. And so those two are at odds with each other, and you kind of have to make a choice. The cool thing is either one of those choices is a winning proposition. You're going to win either way. I guess you could make the case about the marginal benefits of one over the other, but you're so far and away from the choice that everybody else is making, the normal run-of-the-mill choice, that I don't want you to come away from this conversation thinking that there's a bad option here. There may be a better option or a best option, but either way, this story is going to end very well for you.
Yeah, I hear you. And you know, it's funny because I consider myself an optimizer in life generally, but I'm definitely with you. Like there is just that allure of having your life expenses being $20,000 or $25,000. Like you just have so much flexibility then, and you just simply don't need that much money. So there is that mental allure to me of that.
And the stuff that you can do with your tax bracket that you fall in. To me, there's something so awesome about saying I didn't have to pay anything in taxes this year, or I was able to play all these games with the savers credit or everything else because my life costs nothing. I didn't have to take my income. I mean, I don't know. You kind of give up some of that when you're in some of these higher marginal brackets.
Yeah, it does seem like you have a lot more in the way of FI hacks, like major FI hacks, you know, potentially getting college for free if your income is below some amount, or healthcare for free if, you know, the current system holds. And I mean, there are a lot of these really advanced FI hacks that you're able to take advantage of if your income is ultra, ultra low. So I would love someone smarter than me to go out and make the case mathematically for that point where you just get so many benefits just thrown on you if your income is, let's say, $25,000 or less, once you're at FI, obviously. That's what we're talking about here. Income being usually pulling that money out of a 401k or some type of retirement vehicle. So clearly we're not talking about people living on $20,000 a year of income, you know, just normally in life. But yeah, that would be an interesting calculation.
And the thing is, for other people maybe looking at the outside, I'm not talking about living in a tiny house. I'm talking about having a $75,000 a year lifestyle while your expenses only cost you $20,000 or $25,000 a year. So it's a very generous, optimistic lifestyle. And there's ways to do this just a little bit smarter. Now, I will say that Big Earn from Early Retirement Now, who are actually going to be interviewing in the next couple of weeks, he made the case to me to not pay off my student loans and take advantage of essentially being able to reduce your marginal tax bracket. I mean, certainly you can make the case for it either way. So I think those are like two tandem storylines that you should explore thoroughly. One, all the benefits of being able to spend a decade or two decades in a very low marginal tax bracket versus just delaying it all out and letting your loans ride while you optimize your tax advantage vehicles. So anyways, just a very interesting conversation and one that we can do. All right, so milestone number six is the crossover point. And this is one that when you're tracking your investment vehicles, you're looking for that point in time where for the first time ever, your money earned more than you did from working. So your dollars are working harder than you are, you know, 24 hours a day. Brad, why don't you go ahead and set this up as an example so people can visualize this?
Yeah, this is a cool one. And I hadn't really considered this as a milestone before, Joel, and I really love it. So I guess just hypothetically, or at least this is the way that I look at it. So let's say your net worth in the market is $300,000 and the market went up 3% that month. So your assets went from $300,000 to $309,000. So they went up by $9,000 with you doing nothing. You did no work. The money, that's just from past savings. And let's say even you make $100,000 in your job. So you have $100,000 and that comes out to $8,300 roughly per month. So by you working that entire month at a pretty darn good salary, obviously $100,000 a year, you earned $8,300 in pre-tax money, right? That's a whole separate argument also. But you earned $8,300. And just by virtue of being at this crossover point and your assets went up a significant amount that month, you earn $9,000 just from being there. So that's a cool concept, is this crossover where your money earned more than you did.
That is one that we kind of came up with on the fly with Joel. So that one is super cool. And to me, that would be a huge celebration, wouldn't it?
Yeah, that really would be. And, you know, honestly, I've never actually looked at that conceptually, like at my own investments. I clearly have reached that point, but I wish that I would have went back.
Exactly. Wish you could recapture it? I mean, that would be like highlighter, asterisk, bottle of wine, making it rain from the ceiling. It's that cool. You need to hit the pause button and just focus on it. And if you didn't realize that it's a milestone, you just miss it, right?
Yeah. How many Jonathan catchphrases can you put into one sentence, right? Mine would have been doing cartwheels. I think that would have been mine.
What are you, a king? You know, it is in context. So I should just take a second and say that Santos was giving us, I would imagine, a pretty good natured ribbing about all the little sayings that we've developed over the last really 100 some odd hours that we've spent talking into these microphones. And it really is hilarious. Just the things that you say that you don't even realize that you're saying, but you say them a lot, right? And I know in particular, Brad, you just have this really hilarious way of getting up on the soapbox. And much of what comes out of your mouth is worthy of t-shirts. So it was a fun strand to read and just be a part of. But don't be a lemming, man. Don't be a lemming.
Yeah, I love that thread. That brought a permanent smile to my face for days as people were chiming in on that. So yeah, it was really cool.
So the crossover point was the one that I really did want to take that few extra seconds just to highlight, because I think that is just such a monumental moment for anyone that's tracking their progress. But the rest of these are really cool too. And obviously your life is just continuing to get better and more secure. The power is continually shifting toward your end of the playing field. And as you get closer to FI, essentially, milestone number seven was FlexFi, which is where you're at 20 times your annual spend. Essentially, you could rely on the 5% rule at this point. The milestone number eight is actually the big one, financial independence, where you're at 25 times your annual spending. That's obviously the one that our show is based around. That's the one that the FI community is based around. And then finally, past that point, you can make the case for milestone number 9, which is FATFI. And this is what J.L. Collins pretty much considers a 100% thing. This is 30 times your annual spending. It's as close to a sure thing as you will ever get, quote unquote. And so that's more looking at like a 3% withdrawal rule. And basically, again, that concept of FU money is following you along this path. And as you get closer and closer to FI and then to FATFI, the power is continually shifting. And along with the power is freedom. And along with freedom, hopefully, is the time to pursue happiness.
And I actually wanted to go back to FlexFi for a minute, because I think Joel had some interesting input here. And basically, FlexFi was when you're at FI, as long as you're flexible with your spending going forward. And this might even, in like a catastrophic case, mean going back to work or working some minor part-time. And realistically, that's kind of tongue-in-cheek about catastrophic, because many of us in FI are going to earn some income or do some kind of side hustle that just naturally earns some money. So he had two interesting points here, which was, according to the Trinity study, even FlexFi, which is, you know, 20 times your annual spending or the 5% rule, this has an 82% chance of success even with no flexibility. Right. So take the flex out of FlexFi and it still has an 82% chance of success. So, I mean, that's fantastic. You would take that if, you know, you walked into a casino and you wanted to gamble. Like, obviously, you would bet every single dollar you had to eternity if you had an 82% chance of succeeding every single time. So just in and of itself, this is pretty safe. And I think Joel would argue that to him, the riskier proposition would be working an extra couple of years just to get closer to 90%, 96%, 99%. So, you know, I really like this concept of FlexFi. And to quote Joel, he said, the worst case scenario is everybody else's everyday scenario. And that is just so powerful, right? Like, everybody else's everyday scenario is going to work. And if that's your absolute worst case scenario here, in 82% chance with no flexibility of this succeeding, and that's not to mention a couple bucks here and there from a side hustle, et cetera. I mean, just in and of itself, that raises your chance from 82 way higher. So the likelihood of you needing to go back to work in that worst case scenario is very slim to me. So FlexFi is a concept that I had never considered before hearing Joel talk about it and reading his article. But, you know, that might be a more realistic FI number for many people.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And the other half of that is, what was inspiring to me about the way that Joel put these together was that because him and Alexis had spent so much time first slashing their expenses, they didn't need to be a millionaire to hit these numbers. Every single one of the numbers they were dropping, it felt doable. It felt achievable. And I think it was just a great set of metrics to put out there to say, this is a normal middle-class family that's living a more optimized lifestyle. And you can replicate this and you don't need to go live in a van down by the river, right? In order to achieve this. And you don't need to make the same choices that they're making, but just by recognizing that this is a very normal couple that's just willing to live this slightly more optimized lifestyle. And because they are, they can reach FI in their 30s and they don't need to be a millionaire to do it. And I just appreciate Joel taking time to share really their life with us for the period of time that we got to talk about it last week. So Brad, I know that you and Laura had a conversation about this episode. What was your general thoughts about it?
Yeah, I mean, I think the large part of our conversation was actually my one like flippant answer to the, you know, where am I on the milestones of FI? And I think Laura's a private person and she doesn't ever love me talking about any of our financial stuff, which, you know, probably to the detriment of the podcast, but that's not.
It's fine. It's a good thing that you didn't pick a podcast talking all about personal finance. That's
No, but seriously, I think I responded FATFI, and Laura's contention was like, that's just incorrect because on multiple streams, I guess my question was during the episode was, does this count my businesses? Does this count my side hustle? And I think then pretty much anybody could say they're at FATFI, right? Like if their side hustles brought in more than their annual expenses and they thought it was going to last in perpetuity, then you always would have enough money to cover it, even if you didn't have the net worth to sustain it, right? Like, I mean, does that make sense?
No, yeah, it actually does. I think there's some nuance there, but I think it would heavily rely on just how we frame the conversation. But essentially what you're saying is if you're relying on your job to justify your number, that's the opposite of what we're trying to achieve.
Yeah, then you don't have the number, right? So I think that was why I asked you guys, like, does the side hustle count? Because I think Laura's point was, if my websites imploded tomorrow, where would we be, right? Would we be at FatFi? No, we unquestionably would not be at FatFi. And, you know, I did kind of try to specify that in the actual episode, but she really wanted me to emphasize this, is we are definitely by no means at FatFi. We are not even close to 30 times our annual spending. I suspect we're somewhere, I think I said, between FlexFi and Fi, probably closer to FlexFi.
I'm glad you clarified that. I don't think that we should just leave it right there. I want to kind of, now that you've gone back and put the huge asterisk beside it, I want to come back to that, because in our community, we are constantly focusing on the side hustle. And the side hustle in the construct we're talking about is, in most cases, something that you can get very excited about, something that you are passionate about. And while I agree with the baseline, the premise of what she's saying, and in fact, I think we've even said that in a prior episode, that at some point your side hustle doesn't need to work forever, because at some point you're using it as a vehicle, again, to get to your number faster, which will then allow you, if it were to implode, you could just step away from it. I also think it's reasonable to say, if this is your absolute passion and you're tap dancing your way to work, I don't think that you need to discount it completely. And so it's kind of one of those, you can both be right at the same time type things, and just use your own common sense to justify it. I think that maybe just from a mathematical perspective, I agree with Laura, but from a psychological perspective, with where you are in your mental game, I think that you can totally say you're at FatFi right now, because you're doing what you love. You're able to earn an income from it. And when you combine that with your investment vehicles, you're great, right?
Yeah, I like that. And I think that'll help the marital smoothness if we say we're both right.
That's You're both nice, right. Wow. We should write up. We're going to write a marital book next. I'm sure that's going to go over swimmingly well.
Yeah. The bozos from Choose FI.
Found at a Dollar General near you.
Yeah. <That's awesome. laughs> but yeah, I think I like that. I think, you know, we're somewhere in that part of the continuum, and I think it evolves, right? So I feel comfortable saying we're at FlexFi or above, and it changes every day. Who the heck knows, right?
And what I love is that when the Fi community starts talking about side hustles, and don't get me wrong, if you just want to learn how to create a business, there are a lot of podcasts to choose from on how to start a business, how to be an entrepreneur. You have several hundred, if not thousand, podcasts that you can choose from for how to start a business. But when you're starting a side hustle from the Fi community, there's an end game. There's a strategy there. It's a vehicle that you can use to get to Fi. And after you're at Fi, you can make the choice to keep working if you love what you're doing. That's great. I mean, that's probably ideal, but you don't have to, because at some point the numbers just work for you and you can then make a choice. And I think that focus allows us to have a different and a more nuanced conversation than the just pure business crowd.
Yeah. So I think to just kind of close this recap of the milestones is, we would love your input, and we expect to really refine these milestones and the checkpoints, especially that Jonathan mentioned earlier in the episode. I think these are important, and I would love to have these as almost like Jonathan said, like a little gamification of this entire Fi journey, right? Where we can all say like, oh, I'm at milestone 4, or I just crossed off 3 checkpoints today. Like, I think that would be cool, and I think it would really add to the community. So we want and need your input on this. So, you know, send us an email, or preferably go to the Facebook group. Again, it's choosefi.com/Facebook to join, and just give us some information. I'm sure there are going to be many threads on these milestones and on these checkpoints. And, you know, let's kind of refine this. And we'd love, heck, if somebody wanted to take the lead on this and really help us out, that would be awesome. But I think this will be a fun project for the next couple months until we refine this down to something we're all pretty happy with.
I love this conversation. To me, it's a high level conversation. It's not down in the weeds, but it's one that pretty much anybody can appreciate. And then if they're willing or desiring to dig deeper into this stuff, they can really grab hold of it. And there are numbers that you can incorporate into your own life to find out exactly what you are. But one of the things that's very interesting to me is that Joel is going to be pulling the trigger on his Fi date in January of 2018. And that is amazing. First of all, Joel, congratulations on that. What a huge achievement, and essentially a 180. Yeah, see what I did there? 180 on your life. And I'm very excited for you and for Alexis, for what that's going to mean for your family. But it does present an extremely interesting case study for our audience, because a lot of people feel, and I'm going to throw Matt out there as someone that's very vocal about it, that the stock market is overvalued and overpriced, and that we might be approaching a downturn. And this brings up a very interesting problem to tackle for our community on sequence of return risk. Because although essentially across the board, even Matt believes that your 20, 30, 40 year prospects for returns are going to roughly approximate 8% in the short term, the near 10 year future, Bogle himself is predicting much lower returns. And again, that's fine. But for someone that's actually pulling the trigger now on FI, the sequence of return risk basically mean that your first few years are the most important. And so if you pull your FI trigger and then immediately suffer maybe just stagnant years or even a loss in your income, those disproportionately hurt your long-term results. Now, I'm not prepared to give you the answer to this today, but I think that it's important and that it's a fun conversation, even if at some level it may be slightly depressing to talk about. I think it's a conversation that's worth having to explore drawdown strategy. Drawdown strategy when it's going right, drawdown strategy when it's going wrong. And Joel has spent a lot of time looking at this, so I have no doubt that he will be prepared to handle whatever the market throws at him, and he'll have a strategy for that. He'll have a quote-unquote backup plan for his backup plan, and he's going to be fine just because they've spent the time focusing on decreasing their expenses first. But I think following his journey as essentially the prototype of what Matt says you should be worried about. What if you were to pull the trigger right as the market were to take a downturn and you were to take the full brunt of this sequence of return risk? What does that actually look like? And so that's one of the reasons that I am so excited and inspired to follow Joel's journey and at the same time arm him and arm our community with what to do if that were to happen. So Brad and I don't claim to be the experts on this. We have made it abundantly clear that we are on this journey with you. We're just talking about it a lot, right? And so our goal is to find people that have already spent the time to come up with an intellectually honest answer without something to sell you, but just want to share their information. We want to bring them on and have that conversation, learn from them, and then figure out how to implement it into our own life. And so that's one of our goals. We have JL Collins coming up soon to talk about wealth allocation models. We have Big Earn from Early Retirement Now coming on to talk about sequence of return risk and all the technical details that frankly are so far above my head that I couldn't even pontificate on it without someone else's help. And then along with that, then move into the next phase, which is then maybe talking about drawdown strategies. And I'm very much keeping Joel in mind for this because he is like me. He's this eternal optimist and he's doing this right now. So it is the perfect case study. We actually have somebody to track and he can share with us what he's doing, what's working, what's not working. It's this perfect circle of he has information, he's implementing it. We go out, we find new information, and we just kind of keep coming back to it. And throughout the process, we all learn from it. We all learn what not to do, and we all hopefully get some extra tools that we can put in our belt for what if we find ourselves in a similar situation. You can only get better by being a part of this conversation. All right, so let's go ahead and switch gears here for a second. I'm excited to play a voicemail that we got from Noah from moneymetagame.com. He is our in-house expert on just FI hacks and life hacks. So I've got a voicemail that I'm going to go ahead and play here. We've got a great tip for you.
Hey everybody, this is Noah again from Money Metagame with this week's actionable life hack. Today we're going to take a second look at some recurring bills that most people don't think twice about, your utilities. From the energy coming into your home in the form of electricity and gas, there may be more than one provider in your area. And these different providers often compete to get your business by offering incentives to switch, which can often come in the form of lower rates or even sign-up bonuses such as gift cards or airline miles. This will vary pretty heavily by location, but one example I can give is Southwest Airlines. If you happen to live in Illinois, Massachusetts, Maryland, New Jersey, or Pennsylvania, and aren't already using NRG for your electricity, you can get a 10,000 point bonus for switching and an additional 2 points for each dollar you spend on electricity going forward. Southwest also has a similar deal with Everything Energy in Texas. Make sure you aren't overpaying for electricity just to earn some points, but it could end up being a win-win of cheaper energy and free airline miles. Be sure to check out the different providers in your own area and see if they have any incentives to switch. Switching should be as simple as calling them up and telling them you'd like to switch. Nobody has to come out to your house or anything like that. The second utility you might not have thought about is trash pickup, including recycling, compost, and anything else you're putting in a bin to get picked up on a regular basis. Most areas charge depending on what size container you are using each week, and sometimes the difference can be significant. If you haven't evaluated your trash needs lately, or recently took up a life of minimalism, mechanism that generates less waste, it might be time to reevaluate. If you happen to be putting out a half-empty container to be picked up each week, there may be opportunity to save some serious money. So if you're looking for additional ways to trim down spending, don't forget to take a second look at your utility bills. Aside from the standard recommendation of simply using less energy, it may be possible to pay less and get a bonus for the energy you are using. In addition, take a closer look at your trash pickup to see if you can save money by switching the size of the container. Thanks for listening, and be sure to share your own tips for saving money on utilities in the Facebook group. See you there.
Yeah, that's a cool challenge from Noah to actually post these in the Facebook group, right? I'm sure if Noah came up with those couple, I'm sure there are many, many other ones out there. And I'd like to echo the garbage savings, actually, because this was something that I did a couple years ago, and it was slightly different from what Noah's describing, but it was just basically calling for price comparisons. I just always had this sense that what we were paying for our garbage was just like ridiculous and astronomical. And it just happened that when we moved into our neighborhood, there were 9 other houses on this block and all 9 of them were using the same company. So I just kind of naively assumed that was the company. But luckily, this other company came through and gave us a quote that was 70% off of what we were currently paying. And it wasn't like a gimmick or an introductory pricing. It was just that was the price. So I was able to sign up for that, and I'm still paying that exact amount to the dollar. Now, I think it's probably 4 to 5 years later. So that's been a big dollar savings for me. So just a real simple, just like what you do with your auto insurance or your home insurance, do it with your garbage pickup as well. I think there's a lot of room for savings there potentially.
And I view my waste collection as like the Sopranos of Richmond, because they have just slowly crept and owned my entire neighborhood. And I think it's almost more pervasive than you think, because every trash can that's out there has the sign for the service that you're using. And inevitably, what happens when you move into a neighborhood, you just look to see who your two neighbors are. And I guess the one plus side of that is that you at least know when the trash needs to go out. Because even though it's been coming on the same day every single week for the last 3 years, you still, for whatever reason, have to go out there and see when your neighbors put theirs out in order to go put yours out as well. But the downside of that is consistently every 6 months, they've raised my price like $2, and they're just counting on me to be passive about it. And then I heard that they got wind that another company was moving in. And so they said that if you called them, that they would then reduce their prices. Just, I can't stand that. It just irritates me to my core that I have to make phone calls to keep my prices low. But it's just the reality of the world you live in, right?
Yeah. I mean, it is what it is, unfortunately.
They
yeah,
just take advantage of lemmings.
And it happens to everybody. It happened to me, right, for years. So I just was too lazy, just similar to what I mentioned a couple weeks ago, which was I was too lazy with my car insurance, even though everybody knows, right, or everybody says that you should call once a year, once every 18 months to try to find better prices. I just didn't do that. I was just lazy. And I'm kicking myself for it now because I cut my car insurance almost in half. So just make the call. And that's what we say here, right, is take action. You can actually save hundreds of dollars by just picking up the phone, calling a couple competitors, and just see what's out there.
And we know we've talked a little bit about the importance of getting like a good term life insurance policy as a way to protect your family. Frankly, with as inexpensive as those are, for those of you that have been procrastinating on it based on cost, just making a few of these small little tweaks will more than offset the cost of this term life insurance policy that you know you need to get. So get off your butt, go take action. Frugal one of the week, Brad. Michelle posted on our Facebook group, find money that you didn't even know you were missing. Go to unclaimed.org and we'll put a link to that in the show notes, and search by your state of residence and name to see if there are funds sitting in an account somewhere that belong to you. I just did this and I found 2 records for me from a stock I used to own, and also 2 for my husband from a doctor's office. You file a claim and you get a check in the mail. She says, let me know what you find. Let me know what you find. That's freaking awesome that you can do that. So definitely worth checking out. And there will be a link to that in the show notes. And if you want to join our Facebook group, which now has 1,500 members, which are very active, you can go to chooseify.com/Facebook. And there's a simple opt-in form and you can join the community. And it's really cool to see new people to FI that have found this concept, frankly, through our podcast, or have found this concept very recently and have joined us on this group. And to see their questions get answered, it reminds you of when you found that rabbit hole for the first time and just how it changes your entire perspective. Very, very cool stuff. See the light bulb go off.
And Vicky in our Facebook group also had a frugal win of the week on magical iced coffee. And I haven't looked into this yet, but it sounds like something I'm interested in. So I'll just read her post here. Another summer morning and it's 86 degrees at 8 a.m. I'd really love an iced coffee from my favorite coffee shop, but we don't roll like that. Enter this recipe for magical coffee. It's so good, so easy, so perfect when you're trying to wrangle children at the breakfast table and don't even have time to make coffee. If I'm feeling particularly decadent, I combine the coffee with freshly baked, previously frozen chocolate croissant from Trader Joe's. So yum, I had to share. And yeah, we're going to link to this recipe here in the show notes as well. It looks pretty cool. So I'm going to try this out for sure.
And I want to come back and talk about, just for a second, about something we talked about last week when we kind of nailed profit centers, and a victim of that conversation was gifts and cards. And Don pointed out to us maybe a nice medium for that. He says, I only buy cards from the Dollar Tree for 50 cents each. It's crazy what they charge elsewhere. Even the stuff at Walmart isn't cheap. And then your brother, Scott, he also made a post talking about a challenge that they do. They just basically go to the store and they actually give themselves an award for picking out the craziest or the most absurd card. And they don't even buy it. You just get an award for which one you would have gotten, which is a nice little pivot on that. I thought that was hilarious. The other thing that was really cool is I'm not opposed to spending money on someone. And specifically, someone pointed out that instead of spending money on a card, they actually spent the money on the things to create the card. Now, to me, that's a completely different conversation. And I didn't want to lump those in together because you're actually putting your time and your energy. That's an individual, unique gift that you have used your creativity to make for someone. That's powerful. And you know, spend three times as much money as you want on that. That's not a profit center. That is you putting your own creative talents and ability into someone. And I didn't want to lump those two together because I get that. And that kind of also ties into the gifts. And Don said, if you haven't, I suggest reading the 5 love languages. And he says, I'm not going to try and summarize it, but some people are very gift-based in the way that they show and receive love. And I think there are still ways to be aware of your spending and still do gifts rather than pouring tons of money into these occasions. But if your significant other is a gift person, you may be heading down the wrong road and are trying to eliminate gift giving entirely. And we breezed through that. And frankly, we wanted to get that out there just to get the feedback on that. It's a conversation starter, but I wanted to stress that I am not anti-gift and I don't think Brad is anti-gift. What we really wanted to focus on was this sense of mandatory obligation to buy it for your 20 in-laws, to buy it for all of your siblings, and then not just their siblings, but your second and third generation nieces and nephews, and then your friends with their kids that turned 1 and 2 and 3 years old. And the list never ends. And that is specifically, I think, what was taking the heat of my ire, if you will. And just talking about reeling that in every sense, shape, and form, and really analyzing why you're doing that. Let's now dial it back in and talking about getting just a single gift for someone that shows that you care and love them and appreciate them. I am 100% for that. I've read that book. It's a phenomenal book. I'll link to it in the show notes. I couldn't agree with what he said more, but I think that you can have those two conversations beside each other without saying that either of them is wrong and just look for the heart of what we were trying to get across.
Yeah. And I think what you said there about showing appreciation and showing you care, like that's the point of gift giving, to me at least. It's not like this obligation to buy useless trinkets for every single person in your life. Doesn't that devalue the gift? I mean, that just seems so silly to me. Or even take it a step further, like if you're married or have a significant other, I mean, you have 5 to 10 of these obligatory pseudo holidays that quote unquote everybody says you have to buy gifts for. And for many people, they feel the need to shower the other person with hundreds of dollars worth of stuff. And like many of these people are living paycheck to paycheck or so stressed about money, but yet they just take it as a given. And what I would always argue is don't take anything for a given. Question everything and just think a little bit differently. So I'm not arguing to not buy presents and not show you care to anyone in your life. I mean, like, I'm not heartless. I mean, that's not how I roll, you know, to quote from a minute ago. But like, you have to show appreciation, but do it in the right way. Show that you care and that actually means something. And I think Don's point about the 5 love languages, I've also read this book and it was one of those kind of like eye-opener type books. So I would highly, highly recommend everybody grab it from your local library. It's a really interesting book. And I had never considered what my quote unquote love language was or what Laura's was or even what my kids were. And it's funny because you can actually, once you've read this and you've internalized it as part of just the knowledge you have in life, you see it come out. Like I see my older daughter, hers is words of affirmation. And when you say something nice about her, her eyes like light up. She's a 9-year-old kid. She has no idea that she's even reacting like that, but I see it now. And that then factors on how I communicate with her. So again, like Don said, there's no way that I could summarize the book here, nor do I have the expertise to do so, but I would highly recommend recommend everybody pick that up. It's one of those kind of game-changing books.
All right, guys. Well, it's time to bring this episode to a close. This upcoming Monday, we have Dominic Cortuccio, author of Design Your Future. This episode is going to be a little bit of a departure from us, but it's one that we're so incredibly excited to do. It came out phenomenally well, and we think the story ties perfectly to the goal which we're trying to accomplish, which is to help you pursue happiness. And unbelievably excited to share it with you. This week, we also are recording with JL Collins and Big Earn from Early Retirement Now. As I mentioned earlier, those episodes are going to be game changers. We're extremely, even though we haven't even recorded it yet, we're extremely excited about getting a chance to sit down with them. It's long overdue. And we know that our community is excited about it as well. So really looking forward to that. Finally, we finish every Friday roundup by reading some feedback that we got from iTunes. And we actually do this as this virtuous circle, this ongoing thing where for every 5 written reviews that we get on iTunes, we actually will do a drawing for a copy of JL Collins' book, The Simple Path to Wealth. And if you want to be a part of that, all you need to do when you've left an iTunes written review, just send us a quick note telling us what screen name you put it under so that we can match it up. And you just send that to feedback@choosefi.com. And then every Friday on the Friday Roundup, we will announce the winners. And we do one book giveaway for every 5 written reviews. So Brad, what do we have today?
All right, today we have 2 winners. And the first one is Mike. And Mike said, this is the best 5 podcast. This is a fantastic podcast for those interested in learning how to put themselves in a better financial situation and get to early retirement. Brad and Jonathan attack financial independence from every area, increasing income, frugality, investing, tax reduction, and just making smart decisions. Having consistent episodes, currently 2 per week, is also a huge plus as it helps you stay focused on your goals. Keep up the great work, Jonathan and Brad.
Currently 2 per week. Are we going to go up to 3 per week, Brad? Is there something you haven't told me?
Yeah, he's scaring us a little bit. I'm not sure if we can do 150 episodes a year.
Whew. All right. But you know what? Josh from Radical Personal Finance does 5 a week. John Lee Dumas from Eon Fire does 5 a week. How the heck? But I don't think they're doing hour and a half long episodes either. So I think we'll just stick with the 2 for right now.
Yeah, 2 sounds pretty good. But thanks for the review. And the second winner is Luke.
And Luke says, you have found your home. I mean, seriously, who are the 3 people who did not leave 5 stars? This is my favorite podcast and my go-to blog. I have become actively engaged in the community that Brad and Jonathan have brought together. I long for Mondays and Fridays when the episodes come out, and I gain so much knowledge from each one. This is the community that I have longed for my whole life. The fire is spreading, thanks to Brad and Jonathan. Thank you so much, Luke. That's great feedback. And thanks for standing up for us. There was someone that basically said, I love everything about the show except for Brad and Jonathan. If I could just sub them out for somebody else, that would be great. I don't know what it is, but I just want to punch them in the face.
Yeah, that was great. Always good feedback.
Yeah. Right. I was like, is there something I can do? Can I improve it? No, I'm pretty sure I just want to punch you in the face. Okay. All right, good. I'm good with that. Anyways, the virus is spreading, my friends, and we'll see you next time as we continue to go down the road less traveled.
You've been listening to Choose FI Radio Podcast, where we help middle-class America build wealth, one life hack at a time.